Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors of techcentral.co.za. I'm Craig Wilson, and here with me is Duncan McLeod. Hi, Duncan.
Hello, Craig. So, yeah, busy week. Lots to talk about this week.
So much going on, yeah. Where do we start? Perhaps with DStv Box Office, which I believe you attended last night.
Yeah, hell of a launch. They had at a place called Sinsualo out in Sunning, other side of Sunning Hill. Beautiful housing estate and hotel and conferencing venue. But yeah, they finally took the wraps off their DStv Box Office service, which is a satellite-based movie rental service. Perhaps I should talk a little bit about how it works.
Sure, I was going to say, I mean, how does it differ from regular sort of video on demand services?
It's not pushed over line, over the internet, and it's certainly not on demand. It's delivered to your personal video recorder if you have a PVR. It's only available to DStv PVR users, and it's stored on a section of the hard drive, and it's downloaded and updated at certain times. So the content is there. You just have to unlock it.
Right. For a fee.
For a fee, and that fee is 25 rand per movie.
Which, in fairness, is in keeping with the prices at video rental stores.
It is.
With, I suppose, the added convenience. The downside is there's less of a selection, isn't there?
Only 15 movies.
Right.
But they have promised that they're going to keep those updated fairly regularly. I think they mentioned in the region of 150 movies in total per year.
And will those be releases that aren't yet available on the regular DStv services?
That's correct. These will be pre pay TV and pre public broadcast movies.
Right.
So it won't be content that has been shown on Mnet or the movie channels previously. Some of the movies will appear on the service at the same time that they go into video stores. Other movies will appear perhaps a few weeks after that. I had an interview with John Kotsaftis, who's the CEO of DStv Online and the guy who's been really running this project, and he told me, an avid listener of this podcast, so hi John, they're actually losing money on this service. Because it's a new service, they haven't been able to negotiate the sort of tariffs or pricing from the big Hollywood studios that perhaps they would have liked to have got. Certainly some of the movies they're going to be offering here, they're actually going to be losing money on the service. At least for now, I think they're hoping down the line to be able to go and renegotiate with the big studios if the service takes off in a big way. But he said for now they're losing money on this.
Right. Well, it's an interesting move from them, and I suppose though it's one of those things that companies sometimes have to do if they want to stay ahead and keep sort of customers interested. Is to take a loss somewhere and try and make up for it elsewhere.
Absolutely, especially with competition coming.
Absolutely,
we broke news earlier this year about Southtel's VOD TV, which is due to launch in September. They're going into trial at the moment. Apparently, they're making a lot of progress behind the scenes there, and we should be getting a trial box of that soon. So, quite keen to see what that looks like
and watch this space.
Yeah. So there's going to be two players in the space. They're doing transactional and subscription video on demand, which means. What does that mean?
Sort of flat. I think it means either a sort of flat rate,
that's
a
right,
flat monthly
that's right.
rate, or a per
yes.
per item billing.
They're offering both of those, yeah. They're offering both of those, so you get a certain amount of content as part of your subscription. On top of that, you can purchase movies or television programming,
nice.
Which isn't available as part of the basic subscription service. But it must be said that DStv's plans here are John said to me that these are just the start of their plans in the video on demand market. They're very keen to offer online video on demand services, but the South African broadband situation unfortunately has been holding them back.
Well, as we saw this week too with the Samsung story regarding their 3D TVs, Samsung
yes.
are offering a selection of 3D content for free to its users all over the world and in South Africa, but the problem is it requires a minimum of a 4 meg line to successfully run. And
minimum,
right? Yeah.
And this is a 3D HD content that they're delivering, I believe.
Sure, and for a lot of people, 4 meg is the maximum that they can get.
Yeah.
I mean, some exchanges, like yours, for instance, don't even support quite manage that, do they?
Well, I believe the exchange does. It's the quality of the copper in the ground in the area that's poor. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, as they said, either way, it's infrastructure problems, and obviously DStv have the same problem when it comes to pushing content. Is they just our broadband simply isn't quick enough?
Yeah, indeed, and it's actually holding back what MultiChoice really wants to do online. They are going to launch an online service in a few months' time. I don't know if it's going to get the same sort of traction as the satellite-based VOD service, but
sure.
just simply because of the lack of high-capacity broadband in South Africa. But certainly their subsidiary MWeb is pushing uncapped quite hard, and obviously this is all part of the same strategy about finding new ways of delivering content to end users.
Sure.
But interesting service. So I'm going to try it out tonight, probably. They're offering both SD and HD content. So if you've got an HD PVR, it'll default to the HD movies. And if you've got an SD PVR, you'll get the SD content, obviously. The service works by, well, first you've got to sign up, and then you send an SMS code to a central number, which is apparently standard rate SMS, standard rates. SMS costs apply, so it shouldn't be more than 80 cents or so, I'd imagine. And that then they'll then unlock the movie via the satellite, so you'll be able to watch the movie. And the process, they say, shouldn't take more than a minute or so.
Sure. That's curious that you can't do it directly through the PVR, but I suppose,
well, it doesn't have a return path.
Right.
Yeah. The PVR has an Ethernet port at the back, but it's not enabled. So you can't plug an internet connection into it. I presume they've got plans at some point, and otherwise they wouldn't have put an Ethernet port in there in the first place. But I presume they have plans at some point to activate that port and allow people to have a return path on the decoder.
Sure, and they clearly don't feel that the SMS approach is going to put off the sort of customers who will want to use the service anyway. So.
Yeah, for sure. But it's a move in the right direction. It's probably these sort of services have existed in developed markets for a long time, so we are playing catch up to a large extent. But as the broadband situation improves, hopefully we're going to see more of these sort of services, and maybe international players at some point in the future, like Netflix, coming into this market.
Sure, and it's going to make local players like DStv have to make sure they stay on the ball, because it's sort of that same we refer to it the dumb channel risk, or I forget what the phrase is. Dumb pipe. That's the one. Because if people can get everything via traditional sort of internet connections, traditional broadcasters and the like risk losing out to a lot of subscribers.
Mm. And they have to play in the space and experiment in the space and be ready for when it is possible.
Sure, and take the chances and unfortunately sink a lot of money into doing this in the knowledge that some of these projects will inevitably fail.
Mm. So Stephen Ambrose from StrategyWorks and I were chatting to John after the presentations yesterday, and I asked him, we were talking about the lack of broadband infrastructure in South Africa and all the rest of it. And I asked him whether MWeb or MultiChoice needed to, or the MultiChoice group rather, needed to invest in its own access, high capacity access infrastructure.
Right.
And his answer was quite telling. He said, no comment. So I wonder what MWeb's got up its sleeves in that regard. I know they're quite keen to get access to radio frequency spectrum in the 2.6 gigahertz band, but I'm not sure you can deliver these sort of services, especially high definition video services, over wireless.
Over it, yeah.
Let's keep an eye on that. Mobile price wars are continuing. It's a weekly story.
Hooray.
Now. Vodacom, at long last, has cut its bundle data rates on its standard contracts. I see they haven't changed what they call the broadband advanced pricing. But Peter Ace tells me that the CEO of Vodacom tells me that the vast majority of their customers subscribe to the Vodacom standard offering. The Vodacom advanced clients and the Vodacom standard clients now get the Night Owl service as default across all the products, which means double the bandwidth to surf, or the same bandwidth again, rather, to surf between midnight and 5 a.m.
Midnight and 5 a.m. Yeah.
They're really trying to encourage people to use their network when it's at its quietest.
Sure, which is a sensible move, because as someone said to me a few weeks ago, you have to pay for the network, whether it's full or it's empty, you still have to pay for it. So
yeah.
It's good to try and fill the times that aren't peak times. But the Vodacom announcement, perhaps not as drastic as we'd hoped, perhaps not as big a shift as we would have like to see, but
the company is. I mean, the company did say beforehand that they're not going to get aggressive, because I mean they can't cut their prices to the sort of level that ATA has, because their network won't cope because of the large number of customers they have using it.
Sure, because as you said, unlike ATA, they've got millions and millions of existing customers, and the network's just too congested.
Mm. Cell C immediately responded with with an announcement of its own, which I think kind of stole Vodacom's thunder to some extent. I was looking at the traffic stats on Tech Central today, and Cell C was by far the better read story than the Vodacom price reduction story, which probably tells something in its own right.
It does, yeah.
Cell C has introduced a 10 gigabyte option, monthly option, on a 12-month contract, including a 21 megabit per second modem and a 7.2 megabit per second MiFi-like device, a wireless router type device.
Right, yeah, I think the 21, is if it's a... the sort of USB straight into the side 3G variety.
That's the standard modem, and then the other one is the modem and wireless router in one, which I like because, you know, these speed sticks and dongles or whatever you call them tend to drain your battery life.
I was just going
to
say, but I think if I was choosing, there's no doubt I'd take the standalone modem that can be charged on its own.
Yes, definitely. So R499 rand a month or 5,000 rand a year. It sounds expensive, but that gives you, 120 gigabytes over 12 months.
Indeed, and I think I actually really like the fact that Cell C offers a per year and per month rate. I think it sort of speaks to a sense of transparency for consumers. And I know that some consumers do prefer it that way. You know, they can factor it in and go, right, I make an annual payment and then I don't have to think about it for the rest of the year. And just you know, putting it out there in that way makes it really obvious to consumers what it's actually costing.
Yes.
And I think that's been one of the long-running problems that also, you know, the Consumer Protection Act is hoping to address with things like contractual obligations, is that when you see it as a single figure over 12 or 24 months, it doesn't seem quite as bad. Mm-hmm. But outlining what it's going to cost you every year is a good move, I think.
Yeah.
Also, not a huge cut, but as you said, we can't expect everyone to try and keep up with ATA, because ATA has a number of advantages that the others simply can't match, even if they wanted to.
That's true. ATA, of course, has a smaller network. The special offer of 199 rand a month for 10 gigabytes of data on a 24-month contract only applies to where they have base stations.
Indeed,
They're roaming on MTN's network.
Sure.
So, obviously, the other operators have a distinct advantage there. I'm pretty sure Cell C's coverage map with its HSPA Plus network is superior in terms of geographic coverage area to ATA's at this point in time. But certainly, if you're in a well-covered ATA area in one of the metropolitan areas and you don't need to move around a lot and out of ATA coverage zones, then their offer is by far the best and most attractive in the market.
Yeah.
But if you're not covered, or you travel a lot and you move outside the coverage areas in the cities, then you actually can't take up that offer, and then you'd need to look at something like Vodacom or MTN, or perhaps a Cell C, which is still expanding its network, into the smaller towns.
I was going to say, though, even the Cell C. From my experience, I've been using a Cell C 3G connection, and I have only once in 2 months had been unable to connect.
Mm.
And that was in an auditorium, curiously, in Bryanston. But
at the Dimension Data campus?
That's right.
Yeah, there's no coverage in that auditorium at all. I can't get a Vodacom signal or anything in there. I wonder if they actually block it.
Yeah, I couldn't get it on an MTN phone either.
Mm.
But aside from that, I have not once had a problem connecting on Cell C.
Yeah.
And that's been using it all over Joburg and Pretoria. So
I have noticed on Cell C that when you can't get a 3G connection, the connection is almost unusable. It's so slow.
That's true. Yeah.
Whereas if you're on Vodacom and it drops down to Edge, it's slow, but you can still use
it. Still not quite BlackBerry internet services slow.
True. But yeah, no, these announcements are coming thick and fast, and I've got no doubt there are going to be more to come. Especially, I think, in the lead up to the festive season, when people are looking at.
Absolutely.
And buying phones and contracts and data bundles and all the rest of it.
I think we can expect a lot of price reductions before the end of the year. And certainly, as you said, leading up to the festive season, there's going to be a lot. So here. Let's hope the war continues and people keep pushing prices down.
Yeah. Interesting that the size of these bundles is going up. Cell C, apart from the 10 gig bundle, announced a 20 gig a month bundle, which is really starting to get quite big considering it's mobile. 899 rand a month or 9,000 rand a year.
Sure. Which, as you say, I mean, when you actually work it out and you go, well, that's, say, 240 gigs over a year, it's still not terrible. It's not quite ATA pricing, but as you said, there are reasons that's not doable.
Of course, the ATA deal doesn't include a modem as well.
Sure, there's also that, yeah. And although I was amazed to see that if you opt for either of Cell C's packages and you don't require the modem, it's around 1,000 rand cheaper.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which seems amazing. I couldn't believe that one of those dongles or one of those little standalone 3G modems cost 1,000 rand. Some of that seems seems bizarre when you can pick up a regular DSL router for about $400 and a really cheap Wi-Fi router for about $200.
They are quite pricey. And the faster you go, the more expensive. I mean, if you get a 42 megabit per second router, it's a modem, it's quite a bit pricier still. And I'm sure these LTE modems that MTN was flashing around last week at their demo
will be cost even worse.
A small fortune, yeah. Never mind what the toll it'll have on your battery life.
Sure.
I think I was joking. Was it in last week's show I was joking? Plugging one of these LTE modems with 100% battery in your MacBook could be dead in 5 minutes.
Which, of course, means there's no hope for a Windows laptop.
Cool. So I had a really interesting lunch meeting this morning with Computer Sciences Corporation. They're one of the world's biggest IT outsourcing companies, and they came into the country with quite a lot of noise back in the late 1990s when they won a multi-billion rand IT outsourcing contract with Old Mutual. They lost that a couple of years ago and have been replaced in that business by a consortium led by Dimension Data and through a separate deal with T-Systems. And I'd actually assumed that CSC had quietly rode off into the sunset and disappeared from the South African market. But it turns out they still have an office in Cape Town. They've got about 350 staff employed there, and they are going big. I had a chat with one of their senior executives who is out here this week and will be out here quite regularly over the next little while. They want to quadruple the size of their employee base in South Africa and grow the business so that it contributes 15% of the revenues of Computer Science Corporation's EMEA, or Europe, Middle East, and Africa revenue.
It's ambitious.
Very, very aggressive growth plans, and they're talking about potentially doing some acquisitions, and they say they're not shy to make a big acquisition. They said that in the past, they said they have their balance sheet to fund an acquisition, and they've said in the past that they've done deals as big as $500 million. So we could see some very interesting action in the IT services market in the next short while.
Sure, and the also nice to hear, of course, that they're looking to expand to such an extent that there'll be an awful lot of jobs created in the process.
They're looking to expand from about 350 staff to up to 1,500 staff in the next 18 months or so. So that's an aggressive hiring program. They're going to be hiring staff from universities and technicons and graduates and training them up. So it's good news for the local IT sector because a lot of skills are going to be created, which is important given the lack of IT skills, especially in this sort of field in the South African market at the moment.
Absolutely, yeah.
So exciting times, and it's going to be interesting to see what impact this has on its competitors like Dimension Data, like EOH, like Business Connection, IBM, and T-Systems.
It's going to be an interesting one to watch.
Craig, I think we must take a break there.
Yes.
We'll be right back right after these messages.
The Vox Superphone and your ADSL line go together like taxis and rush hour. Ah! But we do give a hoot. Now you can use your ADSL for more than just surfing. With the Superphone, you can call any phone, anywhere, using your ADSL line. You save money, earn rebates, and box-to-box calls are free. No contracts, just plug and play. Your ADSL and the Vox Superphone. It's the perfect combination. Make the most of your ADSL. Visit voxsuperphone.co.za.
After the advent of the telephone, it took mankind 70 years to invent the color television. And yet, it only took the next 23 years to invent lasers, the internet, to put a man on the moon. Ignition sequence start. It begs the question, what will the business world be like in the next 23 years? Wherever your business is at, Telkom Business will be there with you. Telkom Business.
Virtual Access, ECN's latest cost-saving telecom service. Virtual Access is a single 0860 number, providing your customers with national access to your company, no matter how many branches you have or where your customers are calling from. If you are currently using or plan to use an 0860 number, you need to talk to ECN. Virtual Access is the best price single national number offering in the market. For more, visit ecntelecoms.com. ECN, lowering the cost of doing business.
So, Craig, you had a really interesting visit to a place called the Hartebeesthoek Radio Astronomy Observatory a couple of days ago and wrote a fascinating article for Tech Central. If you haven't seen it, do go and take a look at the website. HARTRAU is the abbreviation for
that's right,
this
yeah.
Facility. It was built 50 years ago to this month. Give us a bit of background.
And, without giving all of the story away, we still want to motivate you to go and actually read it. It was the most incredible trip, Duncan. It was really it's an amazing facility. I met with the acting director, who's Dr. Mike Gaylard, and he was sort of giving me the story and the history behind it. And it was built, as you said, 50 years ago, in a phenomenal 69 days by a team of Texans on behalf of NASA. At the time, NASA was interested in putting more and more objects out into space and looking to find out more about the moon. And of course, it eventually led to the first Apollo mission and a lot of the subsequent missions. But the idea was that they wanted to build a dish here because they already planned to put one in California and another in Australia. And they needed a third somewhere in between the two so that probes would always be able to remain in sight or in contact with one of these enormous dishes. And it really is quite spectacular to see. I was wondering to myself how many people who actually live around the area or how many people who have a weekend house in Hartebeesthoek actually have any idea that it's there because it's tucked away in this valley. Mm. And you actually can't see it from the road. You can see Telkom just up the road, a few kilometers, have some smaller dishes themselves. But you actually have to drive right down into the valley before you see it.
I was there about 10 years ago to take a look around, and it's amazing. You drive up this little narrow road. You've got wild animals and
things
all over the place. Yeah, and you wonder where you're going, and then you come around this corner and you see this gigantic 26-meter dish, which was constructed 50 years ago. But it's quite amazing. It's like this little scientific.
Enclave
in the African bush. It's a remarkable place to visit. So if you ever get a chance, do go. But check out Craig's story. It's a great background on why NASA was here, building this facility in the first place, and how they pulled out after the Apollo mission. It was after the Apollo missions. And how they've repurposed it really. For education and for scientific research in South Africa.
And the other thing that really astounded me was in terms of repurpose, not only did they manage to sort of come up with projects that would ensure its survival, but I was amazed by the sheer variety of faculties and fields of study that have been influenced by the facility and that it's really made a contribution to. You know, they do all sorts of, obviously a lot of space-related and tracking and mapping sort of applications, but they're also incredibly involved with GPS. They were talking too about the problems of accuracy, and I learned all sorts of peculiar things that day, like the fact that the assistant director was telling me that they've actually measured the sort of ground there, and by day it is sort of 20 centimeters higher than it is at night, and he described it as the Earth breathing. Good during grief. The day. He said that the sort of heat and the expansion on the tectonic plates means that the altitude at any given point is usually fractionally higher by day than it is
20 centimeters
by night. But I know that's what I thought, and I thought that's not quite so fractional. Similarly, they said they're able to plot things. For a while, the problem was actually working out exactly where things were, because your measurements, even if you're measuring from point A to point B on planet Earth, are still subject to conditions between them, and you don't realize quite how much that can change. And they said one of the useful things about this was that they can now tell things like the fact that the HARTRAU telescope, the radio telescope is moving approximately 2.5 centimeters a year. And so it's all these little things that they
That's because of continental drift.
That's right, yeah. Mm. And that they actually factor in two calculations, because obviously, after 10 years, that's sort of 25 centimeters. And after 30 years, it would in theory start to throw things out a little bit. And if you're a quantity surveyor and you're relying on GPS to, build a highway that needs to meet another highway, many kilometers away, this sort of precision is becoming more and more important to people.
Mm.
And HARTRAU is one of the facilities that make sure that GPS systems actually know exactly where the devices they're communicating with are. It's it's an amazing facility, and I was very pleased to get the opportunity to visit. There's, as you said, they do all sorts of educational things. Most of the visits are only by appointment, but if you're interested in this sort of thing, you would definitely do well to go and pay it a visit. And it's not that far out of Joburg.
No, it's just it's not even the distance of Michaelisburg. It's this side of the mountains.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. Great. Well, this is going to be quite a manufactured segue, but while we're talking about NASA and similar things, Backhorse Lion is out this week with something called Mission Control, amongst other things.
And Launchpad.
And
yes.
Launchpad, yes. I've installed it on my MacBook, and I know you're running it on your iMac there, Craig. What are your initial thoughts?
From the little bit I've seen, I like it. We've had a bit of frustration getting toggling between full screen apps functionality working, because we've got a two screen setup and it can't seem to decide what should be full screened. But there are a couple of niggly little things. You know, you get used to your way of doing things, and I'm still adjusting to some of the gestures, and some of the ones that I used to like are now gone. But on the whole, I think it looks slick. I like the fact that they have included more gesture functionality. It'll take a little bit of getting used to. But as I said, the worry at the moment is for some people is seeing which applications are compatible with it and which aren't. So if you are thinking of upgrading, have a dig around and check that the sort of really crucial apps are compatible. Obviously, I imagine almost all of them will be upgraded in due course, so you needn't worry. But if there's something you really need to use, it's worth checking.
I was reading a piece yesterday saying that there've been some problems with the Adobe Creative Suite. Not sure the extent of those, but if you are using Adobe CS5 or CS4, I think CS4 is actually worse hit than CS5. But if you are using an Adobe Suite, it's probably best just to check out those incompatibility issues before upgrading, or wait for Adobe to issue a fix. But when I first installed it, I got irritated because all of these gestures, and they changed my gestures, and I could no longer use the bear claw on the trackpad to bring up my desktop, and that sort of thing. But it's slowly winning me over, and certainly gestures is one of the biggest. The change gestures and the new gestures are one of the biggest components in the new operating system, but I'm starting to like it. They've very clearly decided to borrow design ideas from the iPad, with full screen apps and the ability to flick between apps, and for example, you can take your finger and sort of drag it inward in a sort of motion with all your fingers, and it brings up I think that's called Launchpad with all the icons, and quickly switch between your apps. I almost get a feeling that once third-party apps have started to go full screen, I may not even need to use the dock anymore.
Sure, it does look like the sort of dock obsolescence is in the post, yeah.
Mm.
The other thing I thought was really interesting was you were telling me this morning about the quick calculation you did. We read a figure that suggested that 1 million people downloaded Lion yesterday, and of course that's one of the other novel things about it, is that for a change you no longer have to go into an Apple store and actually buy a disc. You can do it over the air, but
which is an irritating for people in bandwidth starved countries like South Africa.
Well, as we said, I saw some people talking about figures and saying that, you know, trying to factor in the cost, because it wasn't just the $30 for the Lion, but if you're on a capped package, 3.6 gigs is not inconsiderable by South African standards,
especially if you've got multiple Macs to upgrade.
Sure, and don't want to go through the hassle of
burning a disk,
trying to make a boot disk, which the functionality for which isn't actually provided. There are just various workarounds that people have created for it.
But they will be releasing Lion on a USB stick at the end of August at a cost of $69. So it's a little pricey, but considering you can get it for $30 in the App Store.
Sure, for $30, that best be a good thumb drive or flash stick. Yeah.
Well, presumably it'll be a 4 gig stick.
Sure, so I think I'll pass. But you were saying, if we worked it out at a million downloads at 3.6 gigs.
Yeah, I worked it out over 24 hours, Apple's servers would have consumed or used 4,000 terabytes of data in 1 day.
Unbelievable. And amazingly, it didn't go down.
It didn't go down, and it was fine. I was downloading it. I was downloading it on your Mac while you were out, Craig, and it was coming down a little bit slowly. But on my Mac, it came down at full speed just a couple of hours after it was released.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. And I mean, it was nice to see that they could pull that sort of thing off. And it's just a reminder that this is why Apple's doing so well. You know, when it does things like this.
Yeah, and of course, it put out results earlier this week. Or was it? When was it? Was it earlier
this week.
Which completely smashed analysts' expectations and sent the share price up to $400 for the first time. Unbelievable.
Largely on the back of
strong iPhone sales.
iPhone and iPad sales. And all the more impressive if you consider that the iPhone 4 is now a year old device.
Yeah, true.
It's not a new phone, but it's still in the last quarter has really done well and continues to sell extremely well, despite the fact that, comparatively speaking, and especially by cellular standards, it's now an old device.
Yeah, no, certainly this company is firing on all cylinders. And if you look at the the forecasts from analysts, the big analyst firms in the US, they're talking the share up to $525, $550, some of them even talking over $600 from $400 now, which would easily propel them past ExxonMobil and make them the most valuable company in the US.
Yeah, it's quite incredible. But good for them. It also, as we said, it's forcing people to up their standards and really try and keep up, because that's sort of now become the challenge for many. I mean, as we found with the iPhone and especially with the iPad, you know, I've looked at a lot of different tablets now, and it's still a case of people playing catch up. You know, if you consider that Apple released the tablet essentially, you know, the tablet in the form that we know it now, not tablet laptops. They released it first.
Was it two years ago already now, wasn't it?
Exactly. How is it that they've still gotten it right in a way that no one else has managed?
Apps. Simplicity.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it's just incredible that, you know, I mean, even the Android, and I'm quite an Android fan, even the Android tablets I've played with, some of them have been very, very good, but none of them have quite matched the iPad.
I suspect the Samsung Galaxy Tab 10.1 is going to be the first that matches and possibly exceeds the iPad.
Sure.
I've been reading really good reports about that device.
Yes, we're still trying to get our hands on one. So if Samsung, you're listening, do keep us in mind. I've decided to stop hounding you for now.
they're apparently not in the country yet. I know a mate of mine has ordered one, so... As soon as he gets one, we'll get on Samsung's case again about a review unit and get that review up as soon as possible, because I think it's going to be an enormous amount of interest around that particular tablet.
Without doubt. And now we have a less awkward move to the next topic. talking about Apple and why the iPad is so good, you were talking this week about the release of the FNB banking app.
Indeed. I went to a press conference with Michael Jordan, who is the CEO of FNB, and I must say probably the most social media savvy CEO in South Africa. He makes incredible use of Twitter. He seems to be on it all the time. I don't know when he gets his work done, but he's engaging, and he's a really interesting character, and he seems to have built a very good team in that IT department and at FNB Connect, which is their internet service provider. They've released what looks like quite a good app. It's lacking some basic functionality for now. For example, you can't add beneficiaries using the app. You have to go online or call the call center to do that, but they're promising that's going to come over time. And they're planning to introduce technologies like near-field communications into the application software. It runs on BlackBerry, only on touchscreen devices for now. They're promising that devices with tactile keyboards will follow soon. Runs on the iPhone, runs on the iPad as an iPhone app, which isn't great, because the resolution doesn't look good when you maximize it. It runs on Android, and I've been playing around with it, even though I'm not an FNB customer. It offers some basic services like foreign exchange rates and that sort of thing.
Right.
And it is also available on certain BlackBerry devices, touchscreen only, and it's coming to Nokia soon. I think I've missed any there. It looks pretty cool. Must have cost them a fortune to develop across all these apps, because the developers who build mobile apps are not cheap.
Sure. But that's the problem, is that as tempting as it is to just build for a couple of platforms, you really need to be building it for all platforms now.
Absolutely. It looks good. I had a note from someone at Standard Bank to say that they have had an iOS application for the last 2 years, apparently through their Mowali platform. They're awfully named Mowali platform, mowaly.co.za. Apparently, you can find the app there, although when I went onto the Standard Bank website this morning, onto the Mowali website this morning, I couldn't find it.
I've been a Standard Bank customer since school days, and this is the first I've heard of it.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously not very good at marketing it.
No, evidently.
I mean, if you're going to launch a banking app and your name is Standard Bank, call your app the Standard Bank banking app, or just call it Standard Bank. Don't call it Mowali or something else that consumers have never, you know, never heard of.
Yeah, it's a curious decision. Yeah. And anyway, the FNB one at least is showing promise. And FNB really has been showing itself to be one of the more
definitely
innovative banks in recent years. You know, I mean, even things like their support for PayPal, it's not ideal. It's still crippled to an extent. You can't, for example, like you can in other countries, pay from one PayPal account to another. You can't pay another user. And if you receive funds via PayPal, I believe you have to withdraw them to your FNB account within 30 days. Oh. And there's various other stipulations that mean it doesn't quite have the functionality that you can get with it, say, in Europe.
Mm.
But nevertheless, they're the only people offering it. And I think for a lot of people, particularly who run small businesses and who are now beginning to get into the e-commerce side of things and want to be able to accept payments online through, you know, a number of different channels, things like support for PayPal is a great differentiator. I mean, I have to admit, I've been thinking about moving to FNB for about 6 months now. And the more news I read about them and the more I see things like this banking app, the more inclined I am to do so.
I feel the same way, actually. The switching banks is a pain, but I'm just hearing so many good things about FNB and from their customers. You look on Twitter and people are saying rave things about FNB.
People are positively evangelical about it.
Yeah, it's almost incredible. It's like Apple.
Sure, that's what I was thinking earlier, that to my mind there was sort of the Apple of SA banks.
Thanks.
And then I was thinking, well, in fairness, the only thing they haven't gotten right that someone else has, but obviously also they're after a somewhat different share of the market, is Capitec, I saw recently, are also opening certain branches on Sundays.
Capitec is an interesting bank, and they're giving the traditional big four banks a run for their money with their much lower fees. And
sure, and in fairness, providing banking providing banking to the low end of the market, which previously has been largely ignored by the major banks.
Yes.
And frankly, I think that's to their detriment. I think Capitec is doing really well.
The competition is good, yeah. I don't think you can open a business account with Capitec, which is a problem. But certainly, I think that the bank and FNB is that bank right now that can actually show that it's the most technologically progressive, the most tuned in with its customers through social media, and able to give smart consumers the services they want and deliver it to them on the devices that they want is going to win market share.
Absolutely, yeah. I think they're getting pretty close to winning me over too.
Yeah. Great. Before we close, some sad news this week was the passing of Dave Redshaw, who I have interviewed many times in this industry, former CEO of Bytes Technology Group, and before that, CEO of a company called FinTech. Dave was good mates with Bill Fenter, the founder and chairman of Ultron, and very close to the Fenter family. He passed away in Rosebank this week and was quite a giant in the IT industry. So big loss to the sector, and condolences to his family for
absolutely,
that loss.
Yeah. Yeah.
Craig, I think it's time to start the weekend and get this podcast online.
Woohoo!
As always, if you've got any feedback on the show, you can email us at info@techcentral.co.za, and we'd love to hear from you. Until next Friday, cheers. Mm-hmm.